All right, so coming up right now is the Pointless Exercise Bears podcast. Mike Pusateri joins me, as always, to talk about the Bears' win over the Panthers to go to 5-1. And one of the things I've neglected to do at the beginning of the podcast was to tell you where you can see Mike's work. It's at mikepusateri.com, MikePusateri. It's always nice to give a plug to the guys who give their time to do the podcast, and I didn't do it. So check it out. And now here's me and Mike. Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. It's a Monday, and it's the Monday after the Bears won their fifth game of the season. And if I'd have told you that we were going to do a podcast after the Bears' fifth win, you'd be like, "Wow, you guys are still doing this in December?" But no, it's October, and the Bears are 5-1. And with me, as always, is Mike Pusateri. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Doing good in sunny California.
Yeah, way to rub it in. It was snowing like 3 minutes ago here, which is just ridiculous. This
Yeah.
is a completely garbage year in every possible way. Now with October snow, it's just what we need.
October 19th snow too. That's early October snow. Oof.
Well, I lived in Traverse City, Michigan, and we got snow in September once, and no one was surprised but me. I'm like, "Guys, it's September." Like, "Oh yeah, well, sometimes it holds off this long." Like, no, just
No,
stop it.
going the other direction.
But the so the Bears went to North Carolina, where, I don't know if you noticed this, Fox, they do their bumpers in and out of commercials. They had a close-up of the Jerry Richardson statue.
Yes.
That's not there anymore. They hoisted that thing off like Saddam Hussein after the second Gulf War, but somebody forgot to remind the guy in the truck not to play that. So they had this beautiful thing of Jerry holding the football aloft with the two cats on each side of him. On our
Yeah,
podcast.
did I'm sorry, did with the guy in the truck just, yeah, I mean, just use some B-roll
Yeah,
here. This would be fine. I'm
well,
good.
yeah, if they probably
I'll try to check
figured,
this out.
"Hey, what about that cool statue?" Like, well, that's not there anymore. And yeah, Mike Donahue and I talked about it on our podcast last week, and we felt bad for the two Panthers. Like, what'd they do? They didn't sexually harass anybody.
No.
They didn't tell anybody that their skirts were too long. They should be able to stay there. Just
Right.
put the dirty old man in storage. And apparently, the statue is in an undisclosed location because they're worried that it will either get attacked by people who want it completely destroyed or attacked by people who want to liberate the statue. So they've literally hidden it. I was reading all about it during the game because, why not?
The
Because I was
sad
just so
thing about
confused when they showed it. I'm like, "Oh shit, is that thing still there?" And I realized, no, it's not still there.
that is you can totally believe that that's exactly why they are hiding it.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's North
Yeah,
Carolina. I mean,
right.
honestly, the people who want to put it back up are probably outnumbering the people who want to smelt it down and make
They probably are, yeah.
park benches out of it or whatever. So anyway, the Bears led from almost every minute of the game.
Almost stem to stern, nearly.
Yes. And so you would have figured that they spent the whole game, establishing the run, but they didn't. So how about this? The Panthers' defense came into the game allowing an average of 5.4 yards per carry. David Montgomery averaged 3.1 yards for the Bears. That's less. I don't know if you picked up on that math.
That would be less than,
That
yeah.
would be less.
Yes, but you're going to say, "Aha, Cordarrelle Patterson. How did he do?"
Cordarrelle about as good as Ted Ginn
Yeah.
has done on punt returns.
It would
With
be 1 yard.
18 total yards this year in punt returns. Just impressive for a guy who just clearly just doesn't want to do it at all. It's actually 18 more than he probably wishes he had.
Yeah, he looks really disinterested back there.
Yeah, so Montgomery with the 3.1 yards per carry easily led all rushers for the Bears because Nick Foles rushed 5 times for 4 yards and a touchdown. Cordarrelle 1 time for 1 yard.
Terrific.
So that was excellent.
Yeah. That's it. That Bears rushing attack. It's Nagy's really committing to it.
So I did enjoy the Bears' defensive effort. That was fun. Especially the very first possession for the Panthers, which was Teddy, what was the first play? When did Teddy almost get the safety? That was second down? I still don't understand why that wasn't a safety, but it turned out fine because the Bears ended up with five more points out of it than they would have gotten.
Right. And then Tayshaun Gibson was the next play.
Yep.
With the interception.
Gives the ball to the Bears at the seven, and you're thinking, yeah, at least we're in field goal range. And it turned out they were too close. They had to back up to throw the touchdown pass to Cole Kmet. I'm sure that's what it was. So that was the first of the very interesting exchanges during the game where the Bears on third and goal from the four had to call timeout.
Mm-hmm.
13 minutes left in the first quarter. Good time. Good use of a timeout. Had to call timeout because they were going to get a delay game.
Right.
So what happened after the timeout?
I think they had a delay game.
It's just amazing. It's like calling the fire department because you're going to set the house on fire and then setting it on fire before they can get there. I'm going to do it. If you guys don't get here, I'm going to do it. Oh, now it's on fire. I'm going to do it. So they back it up to the nine. That gives Cole Kmet ample room to run his post for the touchdown. So that's probably what happened. They're in there. They're all in their huddle and like, ah, we're at the four. We're too close to run that play. Well, I'll just take the delay then, and we'll throw a touchdown pass.
Little more space. I did. I know you were not a fan of Vilma yesterday, but he did say, I think at that after the delay of game, Nagy is overthinking.
Clearly.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. My only problem with Vilma was the. He was apparently getting a guy's name on the Panthers team wrong all the time, and it was really annoying Hub. So I enjoyed that. I don't remember what the guy's name was, but Hub is like, I can't believe it. And it's like, no, nobody cares, Hub. Even that guy doesn't care. Robert Quinn makes me like him even more.
Yeah.
Robert Quinn, I think, played his first really good game for the Bears. And Vilma's like, well, he's been playing really good for 3 weeks.
No.
And so I'm like, I don't think he was. Because I remember just last week we talked about how the only stat he got in the Tampa game was he picked up the fumble that was just laying there after the big hit from Kyle Fuller. So I looked it up. In 3 weeks, he had a tackle, an assist, and a fumble recovery. Total. Not one of those in each game.
No.
Just one of those at all.
That's spread across three games.
So it kind of makes me think that Vilma didn't really know, but he's like, Robert Quinn's good. Missed the first game. I bet he's played really good the last three. Like, no, he hasn't. But that's fine. But it does show that when the Bears... And then whoever Mario Edwards is, the last 2 weeks, he's just beating the crap out of whoever they've lined him up across from. When they get play from somebody other than Khalil, it allows Khalil to kind of smack everybody around, which is a lot of fun. Because I've missed that.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of that. Teddy Bridgewater got a lot more of that than he wanted. The other thing I liked was Vilma's, right after the half, said, Teddy is not just a game manager. He's really, really playing great. Teddy, at that point in the game, had 60 yards passing. maybe not.
Yeah, well, we clearly saw who won the Better Than Mitch Bowl yesterday. And it was our guy, Nick Foles.
Yes. Yeah, he was... He does weird Nick Foles things. Started off great. Then went like 1 for 7? Something like that?
He went ice cold for a while.
They had that god-awful sequence where they get the fumble recovery, which the ball is rolling on the ground. Akeem Hicks is chasing after it, and so is, I think, Eddie Jackson and Kyle Fuller. If Eddie or Kyle pick it up, it's a touchdown. Akeem, like, shoving them out of the way, gets the ball, falls down. Like, all right, well, it's not going to be a touchdown, but that's fine. We're set up great. Nick Foles, first play, back foot, doesn't even know where he's throwing it, just completely mitches it down the field. It's intercepted.
Just a floater, floating it right down the field.
So then Robert Mays from The Athletic pops up on my Twitter feed, and he's like, that was a terrible interception from Nick Foles, but if you followed Nick, I'm looking forward to the fact that he probably won't miss on his next 10 passes. He was 4 for 4, getting them down to the 1 yard line, and then ran it in himself. So it's kind of the way Nick goes.
Yeah.
Second week in a row that we got a mention of the fact that Nick Foles holds the NFL record for consecutive completions at 25.
That's right.
I have a feeling that's going to become the Jason Kipnis is from Northbrook. Because the Cole Kmet thing isn't going to come up as much because he's just not going to do as much.
Yeah, he's not going to score very often.
Which brings me to why are the Bears trying to make Demetrius Harris a thing? I mean, they were running plays for him, like literally designed just to get the ball to Demetrius, and he wasn't having any of it. One play, he's wide open right at the first down marker. There's nobody within 20 yards of him. It's going to be a huge gain. He just drops it. Later, they run this weird formation where they have all three tight ends in, and the play is clearly run for Demetrius to get the ball, and no, it's not working. Mm-hmm. I don't get it. He's been on lots of NFL teams, and the reason that he keeps switching teams is that they, after you've had him for a while, you're like, well, no, he's not good, so we don't want him. Another former basketball player.
That'll be in the notes as well for the next.
Looks like what a tight end should look like, but if he's not going to catch the ball, and apparently he also doesn't block. But other than that, other than the not catching and the not blocking.
Fantastic.
He's really good.
He's straight out of Central Casting. Yeah. Looks good in the airport.
Okay, so we had the sequence with the call a timeout to avoid the delay game, get a delay game. Mm-hmm. Then we had the we didn't finish that sequence. So we get the fumble recovery, immediate interception, Panthers get the ball back, interception, return for a touchdown. And for the second week in a row, was the second week in a row or second time in 3 weeks? I forget which the other one was. Eddie Jackson's touchdown nullified by penalty. At least the first one, the penalty was on him. This time, it was on Kyle Fuller. And it was a dubious penalty because it was, they called pass interference for coming through the back of the receiver to knock the ball away. And then it popped up in the air and Eddie caught it. Where earlier in the game, Allen Robinson, like inside the 20, the defensive back was there way too soon. Like, Allen's head is snapping down as he's trying to catch the ball, and there was no call on that.
No.
The officiating was not, what's the word I'm looking for? Good.
Good would be the word. Yeah, competent, I would have accepted.
Yes.
NFL caliber would have worked.
Well, it's because they sent Jerome Boger to the Battle of the Bays.
What a great game that was.
It was one of my favorite. Okay, the only Packer games I will watch are the ones where they play the Bears and the ones where I check the score and they're getting their asses beat. Then I can't get enough. I have to watch. Yeah. So I watched the whole second half of that game and just enjoyed it.
You know, can we talk about the Aaron Rodgers and the Jake from State Farm, that commercial where they're throwing the ball to the dog? They look like, both of them look like they're secretly flexing underneath their teeth.
Well, that Jake is, he's a weird shape. He has enormous arms, but nothing else is big. You know, that's a guy who skips leg day. as my good friend Tony Horton would say, he's only worried about the glamour muscles. So he's only doing buys and tries and nothing else. But yeah, he's surprisingly ripped. And yes, I have a feeling that Rodgers, because he's so competitive, was like doing push-ups right before every take and actually trying to flex. You know, not able to talk very well because he's trying to flex and talk at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just gonna throw the ball. Yeah.
I just started a rumor that Danica Patrick ran off with Jake from State Farm. She went to the shoot and went, all right, I'm going to go for the younger model here, Aaron.
And I'm taking that dog with me.
So the Aaron Rodgers stat that did not surprise me The guy's played for what now? 15 years? Through a pick six in the first quarter.
35. Yeah.
It's the third one in his career. The third. I mean, Mitch, that's a half for Mitch.
Yeah, Mitch.
Jay Cutler is like three. You're not even trying.
Hold my beer.
Yeah. Which, as I said before the show, makes me wonder why he can't throw a more catchable interception. I mean, clearly, I mean, he's throwing it behind the guy, something, and they're not able to get their momentum going forward to score. That's un-American.
Yeah.
You got to turn it over, you know, do it. I mean, Favre was practically, you know, blocking for the guys when they picked him off.
Yeah, when he wasn't when he wasn't stacking himself.
Woo, he's got a chance to score. Brett, no. Oh, Brett, that doesn't count for us. What? I don't know all the rules. Yeah, that's good. I remember when I was a kid, I don't remember what year. This is the other podcast. Mike D will know this. But Bears beat the Packers 61-7 in a game. And I remember watching the game as a small child. Gary Fensick caught an interception. And I couldn't understand why, because the end zone right behind him was wide open, why he couldn't just turn and run to that one. I remember asking my dad, why can't he just score in that end zone? He's like, well, then that would be 2 points for the Packers, not for his own team.
That's a good question, though, for a kid. Well, yeah, why take all that effort to run?
Why is he going that way? Those guys are trying to tackle him. Just try. Yeah. There's a perfectly good end zone right there.
A lot safer, a lot less traffic over here.
So that reminds me of a. I can't remember if we were freshmen or we were in eighth grade, but playing basketball. And one of the things that we forgot to do right before the opening tip. Was one of the things we always did was remind everybody on the team which basket we were going to. It should be obvious, because when you're tipping off, it's the basket the guy who's jumping is facing. But it's just like in Little League, we have to remind everybody how many outs there are before every pitch, basically. We always did that. We're going this way. So we win the tip, and it gets knocked back. The ball is on its way, is kind of bouncing down towards the basket. And guy on our team, Dan Cole, runs down to get it. That's not our basket. That's not the one. And he takes it and he goes in for the layup. Misses it. Gets the rebound. Goes back up for it again. I blocked it. And he turned around like, what the hell are you doing? I'm like, that's our basket. So we bring the ball up the court. So... we always wondered how that counted in the stats.
That's what I was just going
to
ask.
I don't think you're allowed to get a block shot on your own teammate. But I came up behind him as he was going up for the second one, and I blocked it, and then we grabbed the ball. And I don't think he scored, and I remember he giving me crap later. You know, well, at least I could have had that basket. It's like, well, that's
like Dan. We just had a meeting about this in the huddle.
So now, do you know who would have gotten credit for the basket had he made the layup?
But that it would have been the nearest the player on the opposing team closest to him, right? Yeah. It should just record it as an own goal.
It should. A minus. It's a minus two on your side of the thing.
Right. Yeah.
I wonder if anybody's ever made a three at the wrong basket. I'm sure they have.
Huh.
But,
boy, you would have think we would have. That'd be memorable. Like, yeah,
that sounds like something for the Scott Van Pelt Sports Center.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's some asshole from Grinnell, probably, where they run that offense where they just shoot threes like 100 a game and they don't even bother to run down and play defense. I bet you they probably do that on purpose. That's part of the offense. All right, shoot at the other basket for a while. What purpose is that, sir?
Yeah, maybe there's like a tape from a 1990 Loyola Marymount game or something.
Paul Westhead said, you know, this is going to revolutionize the game.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the third ridiculous sequence of the game for the Bears was Carolina is driving on them late in the game, and they have a key, fourth and one, it was short.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is the first half. Late in the first half.
It was late in the first half. Okay.
Right.
And the teams are starting to get lined up, and you see Nagy streaking down the sideline to call a timeout because the Bears apparently were in the wrong – they had the wrong guys out on the field.
And it looked to me like Bridgewater was just trying to draw them offside anyway.
Yeah.
While Nagy is sprinting down the sidelines to try to get that vital timeout.
So Nagy gets his timeout. Bears huddle up, get everything organized. What happened on the next play?
They jump offsides.
Yeah.
And Bridgewater's got to be like, seriously?
It's like, God,
two shots at this, and you call the timeout, and I still got you offsides, okay?
So they're playing the Rams next week, and Sean McVay just wrote down in his little notepad, encourage the Bears to call timeout. Because good things happen to you after they call timeout. So,
yeah.
I would say these are not hallmarks of a well-coached team.
Yeah, if you're looking for... you know, things out of the handbook about things to do and not to do. These would be the not to do section.
So the Bears are 5-1. There were questions bouncing around. Are they the worst 5-1 team in NFL history? And I was like, I don't think they're the worst. I mean, because they have a really good defense. So it's not, I mean, they have things they can hang their head on. So the Football Outsiders guys apparently did a, They did DVOA, whatever, I forget what that stands for, but it's
okay. They ran a simulation or something, or what?
Yes, and I believe that the Bears, the current Bears, are the sixth worst 5-1 team of all time. So that's, you know, that's nothing.
Something to be proud of, yeah.
I hope I can pull it up here while we're.
Were there any notable? Were any other Bears? On the list ahead of them, any other Bears teams?
There were not, but oh, here it is. They are the 1, 2, 3. No, they're the ninth. Only the ninth worst.
That's pretty good.
Yes, the only Bear team on the list, but that's because they just not 5-1 very often. The 89 Bears were 4-0, and on the cover of Sports Illustrated, I remember this. I was in high school, and I was like, oh, there's Harbaugh on the cover of Sports Illustrated. They started 4-0. They finished 6-10.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the season where Ditka lost his mind after a terrible loss in Washington. And he singled out rookie defensive back Donnell Wolford as playing one of the worst games he'd ever seen. Which,
right.
I mean, we watched the game. It's like, he wasn't any worse than anybody else, Mike.
No.
But he said, I don't know if we can win another game, if this team is capable of winning another football game. And did the football coach thing where he said football, you know, as if we were worried that, I don't know if they can win another game of Pinochle. It's like, no, it's another football game.
Right.
And unlike most things that year, he was right. They did not win. They did not win another game.
Yeah.
Like
that, that was the famous Wolford can't cover anybody press conference.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Yes.
And Donnell then turned out to be one of the better.
Yes.
Draft picks that they had for quite a while.
Absolutely. Very good player.
The worst 5-1 team of all time, according to Pro Football Outsiders,
mm-hmm.
not that long ago, last year's Buffalo Bills.
Ooh.
They started 5-1. They finished 10-6, and they lost in that ridiculous playoff game in Houston that they should have won. 1991 Lions are on this list. They went 12-4. They lost in the first round of the playoffs too.
Okay.
98 Falcons went 14-2. That's the Gary Anderson hasn't missed a kick all year, and then he missed one in the NFC Championship game and cost them the trip to the Super Bowl.
Good timing.
2015 Falcons. So the Falcons are on here twice.
Wow, Falcons got something to be proud of.
And that team finished 8-8. They did not make the playoffs.
Hmm.
That's the only team on this list, because there's two teams, and these shouldn't even count, I don't think. There's two teams from the strike year in 87, the Chargers and the Vikings. And I don't remember exactly when the strike was, but I think the 5-1 would have included at least a couple of replacement games.
Yeah,
so those aren't, if you had a terrible replacement team, but they managed to win a game or two, that could skew that.
Yeah.
Or maybe the replacement team was actually better than the regular team. They got them to 5-1, and then the real guys showed up, and it's like, we suck.
Right.
They're the only two teams on this list that didn't make the playoffs.
That bodes well for us.
So the two, unless there's a strike this year. Now, one of the issues with this is that of the, if they're 9, 10, 11, of the 12 teams on the list that were that are the worst 5-1 teams by DVOA from 1985 to the present, none of them won a playoff game.
Yeah.
And all but three of them were wild card teams, so they didn't win their division either. Which I guess makes sense if you're a, you know. But it means the Bears are gonna make the playoffs.
That which is good. But it's still kind of incredible that we're after six games they're 5-1 and we're still kind of like, they're not. I mean, the defense, but it's not that good of a team, and Nagy keeps doing the stupidest shit.
Well, that's the thing.
Every game.
I think you'd like to. He's got the closest thing they have to a real quarterback is playing.
Yep.
They really only have lost one important player so far, Tariq Cohen.
Mm-hmm.
The defense is very good. Maybe not quite as good as it was in 2018, but better than last year. And it was still pretty good last year. They seem to have a kicker. And our buddy Frodo Santos, yes. The guy who I've realized is actually taller than a hobbit once I figured out the forced perspective of a movie screen.
Right.
They have the greatest kick returner of all time. I mean, Cordarrell, if you need the ball at the 22, he can do it.
There were a couple times when the ball went, they kicked the ball through the Bears' end zone. I still thought Cordarrell was going to
just grab it and bring it out anyway. Yeah, I don't know. It was funny because they were like, "Wow, you know, you can't let Cordarrell run the ball back on you." It's like, yeah, I mean, he's going to break two a year probably, but you're costing yourself on average field position by kicking a touchback because he's going to bring it out, and the Bears don't block very well. And he's going to get tackled at the 18 or the 20.
Yeah.
And you're going to save yourself a few yards.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the issue with the team is that they should be set up perfectly because you say, all right, well, this is a team that has a really good defense. Their kicking game is pretty good. I don't know about how wonderful the overall special teams are. I think Chris Tabor is kind of an idiot. But you're like, okay, the head coach is an offensive genius.
That's where we should really be shining.
Right, so he'll figure this out, but there is no indication that he's going to figure it out or that he's an actual genius. He was genius adjacent. He stood near Andy Reid, and that apparently was enough.
Yeah. Well, a lot of guys get jobs being genius adjacent. Ask Matt Patricia.
Yes.
That seems to work well for some guys.
Yeah, being Belichick adjacent has not really worked, except for it really does look like Brian Flores in Miami is a good coach. Mm-hmm. That might be the first of the Belichick guys who are like, that guy's actually a good coach. I think the problem is you look at him as 5-1, and I wasn't really kidding in the newsletter today about I worry that these are the Cubs from this year. You get off to the 13-3 start, and you're going to make the playoffs, but then you spend the last two-thirds of the season underwhelming your fans to the point where, like, I just don't think we're very good. And then they prove them right. Because it's fun to be 5-1. It's a hell of a lot better to be 1-5, but you'd like to think that it's actually building to something, and indications are that it's not.
Yeah. No, I thought that analogy was painfully on point. It very much has that feel.
I probably should have done the math as to what the equivalent in a 16-game season is of a 13-3 in a 60-game season. They got to be pretty close to it
Close, yeah.
And especially in a division where the Vikings have decided we suck. And the Lions are the Lions.
Right.
So it comes down to Bears-Packers, but there's an extra wild card this year. So they're, you know, barring a complete collapse, which is not out of the question, but I don't think it's going to happen. You know, they're going to be in the playoffs.
Yes.
And you'd like to think it's going to be more than, well, they would never make them play the early, that awful early game on Saturday. The one that's always the worst playoff game. It's usually the Texans are involved somehow.
Yeah.
They're going to get either Saturday night or Sunday night because it's Chicago.
Right.
And then go home. So the frustration from the fans is we've got a chance to make the playoffs this year. How come we can't figure some shit out so we can do something with it? That's the frustration. It's not that the fans don't like the Bears or that they don't want them to win. It's you're just worried that not much is actually going to come of this. It's going to be a nice little second surge of the coronavirus distraction, and then then we're left with nothing again.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're not seeing a well-oiled NFL offense or even a competent NFL offense, and that's the disappointment.
Yeah, and it's I don't know if you heard.
Because that's, you know, the Bears.
I was going to say, did you hear the Nick Foles impassioned?
I read, everybody was writing about it. So yeah. I'm sure the words spoken were much more powerful than reading him off the screen, because it didn't really seem all that powerful off the screen, but maybe I missed something.
It's interesting. He really was riled up. And basically what he was saying was, we know that they're winning in spite of us. We know we're winning. We're winning because of the defense. And he kept saying, "I'd rather win ugly than lose pretty." It's like, well, no, the Bears,
they don't,
pretty's not. They either win ugly or lose ugly. There's never any pretty.
Yeah, Red Grange was on the Bears the last time they won pretty.
Yeah. But it felt like it goes on for like 2.5 minutes. It felt like a plea to just let me handle it.
Ah. I got this. Yes. I got this. Just give me a sec.
Right. How about we use the little headset as a way for you as a coach to make suggestions that I can decide whether I want to listen to or not? Because it hasn't been lost on people that the offense really looks at its best when they play with a faster tempo and Foles makes a lot of adjustments. It's actually when they seem to run the ball well, because he gets up there and he looks at it, it's like, okay, I see where we have an advantage. We might be able to run there. And I'm probably thinking, overthinking it, but, I mean, they're limited because they don't have any explosive playmakers on their team. They have a really good wide receiver in Allen Robinson, but he's not a 4-2 guy who's just going to, but he's a really good player. You're glad you have him. Jimmy Graham. It's funny because he makes plays, which he didn't do in Green Bay last year, but you get a lot of, and Vilma said a couple of times, the Jimmy Graham I played with, he'd have broke that tackle and gained another 40 yards. So, yeah, we know he used to be better. We know that, but he's the best one we have. So knock it off.
Wow.
So that's cool. That's part of their issue is they're going to have to put together drives to score points, because they're not going to get a lot of huge plays, because Anthony Miller is apparently a nutcase. I mean, we saw it in perfect example of there could not have been a greater contrast. So in the Bear Panther game, the Bears run a play right to the, they run a pass play right to the sticks, which, whatever. Miller catches it. He's going to get a first down. But he circles back because he's going to break two tackles and he's going to get a big gainer. He circles back, gets tackled behind the first down marker. They have to punt.
It was amazing. Amazing play.
In the Green Bay-Tampa Bay game, there was a play where Davante Adams ran a square in right to the first down marker and literally would not move. And when the pass came in, he went to his knees to catch it, knowing that the line in front of him, because they had to like get to the 25. He's right behind the 25, knowing that's a first down. So at the very least, I'm going to get this first down. And he catches it, and they get the first down. And I immediately thought of Anthony Miller, who would have come running back for the ball, which is not that's not a non-fundamental thing to do if you can come, but he would have caught it and then not gotten the first down. And Devontae is like, if I move at all, we're not going to get it. And it's third down, we're going to have punt. So I'm just going to stay right here.
Yeah.
Now, some of that, I know you can be a coach and you can tell guys to do that shit and they get out in the game and they don't do any of it. I get that. But it's when a team is well coached, it's very obvious. And I don't even know if Devontae learned that with the freaking Packers, but at some point in his life, a coach drilled into his head that on third down, the most important thing to do is to get the first down. Whereas the Bears had a couple of plays where on third and relatively short, they threw designed passes that were short of the first down mark.
Right. Which is a problem in two areas. One, you're not running the ball.
Yes.
And secondly, the passes you're throwing are not far enough.
No, because you don't, it's not like you're running these. You don't have Jerry Rice and John Taylor running these crossing routes where the guy's going to bust open. He's going to catch it 5 yards short of the first down, but the passer's going to hit him perfectly in stride, and you've cleared out that side of the field, and he's going to run for, the next 15 minutes, just unabated. Yeah. No, it's the Bear offense. You know that as soon as the guy catches it, someone's going to nail him because the Bear receivers get open about, a little teeny tiny amount.
Right.
So you have to be smart enough. And that's my biggest problem with Nagy is he runs plays that he wants to work. Like, oh, this would be awesome if this worked. It's like, no. You get like, okay, we'll give you three of those a game. The other 70 plays that you run, or whatever number it is in a given game, have to be ones that the personnel that you have on the field can actually execute.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you're just wasting everybody's time.
Right. Is he trying to prove that he is this imaginative offensive guru? Is that part of it with him?
I don't know. My biggest complaint of the Dowell Loggins year, I think he was only the offensive coordinator for a year, right?
Yeah. Was there's a lot to choose from here, I would think.
But was that the Bears didn't have an offense. They just had a bunch of plays. And some of them are really cool. Like Dowell Loggins had like three or four plays that were really cool, but they probably ran, 1,000. And the other 997 just were completely disassociated crap.
Yeah.
And when they hired Nagy, he thought, all right, here's a guy that's, been in he's been in the Andy Reid offense in two different places, and say what you will about Andy and his clock management and whatever, the guy knows offense and his offenses have always produced. So clearly here's a guy who's going to know how to put together a plan and stick to it. And a lot of times with the Bears, it looks like it's just a bunch of plays that aren't related to each other. That one thing doesn't set up another later on in the game. It's just, oh, this would be cool. Let's run this now. It's like, that's not the point.
Whenever these guys come to the Bears, if they have an offensive background, they just forget. It just doesn't work. You go to Mark Trestman, here's a guy, CFL, million points a game. They always try to do this, and they just forget how to play offense when they get to Chicago for some reason.
I wonder if maybe on the sheet, his BU sheet, one of the other things should be reminder, this is not the Arena League.
Right.
You can actually run the ball here. It would be a good shot. Now, it's funny because my complaint my whole life had been that the Bears had such a, no matter who the offensive coordinator was, they had a couple of years with Ron Turner where they actually had a pretty competent offense. But for the most part, it was a team, Trestman chucked it around to his, it worked for like a month and then not.
Yeah.
But for the most part, Bears offenses have been boring and unimaginative and just run, run, run. So it's amazing to me that I'm at a point in my life where I'm yelling, you need to run the ball. I felt like I had seen enough Bears rushes for the entirety of my life, and I wouldn't give a shit if they ever passed again, or if they ever ran the ball again.
Right.
But their inability to run, coupled with his complete disinterest in making it work, is a huge hindrance to the rest of the offense. Because, and it really feels like the last couple of weeks, especially, play action is not even a thing anymore.
No.
The RPOs that they were supposedly going to be able to run now with Nick because Mitch was too stupid to figure out what to do when, that was going to be brought back in the offense. Unless he just decided that Tariq is the only guy they could run that stuff with, and he's gone, so we're just going to throw that out. Not even the threat of running it. There are coaches who will tell you that you don't even have to run the ball effectively. In fact, some would say that you can almost use that somewhat to your advantage. It sucks if you can't, like on third and two, feel confident that you can gain 2 yards. But when you run the ball, defensive linemen get used to lighting up your running back to the point where they look forward to it. And all of a sudden, a well-timed play-action pass brings everything open. The linebacker's cheating up because he's going to blow up your guy, and somebody slips behind him and you get a big gain. But if if they're to the point where, which defenses apparently are right now with the Bears, which is they don't want to run it, and when they do run it, they're not very good at it, so we can play pass first and just react when they finally run the ball, and we're still going to be able to stop them, then that's not doing you any good at all. And it also feels like, and maybe this is, of course it's anecdotal, it's not like I broke down the film, but it was especially apparent in the Carolina game, but I feel like it happened over and over again in Atlanta and at home against the Bucks too. The running plays seem to be designed for offensive linemen to have to hold their blocks for a very long time. And if you have a bad offensive line to begin with, there's no way that's going to work.
No. Our offensive line does not specialize in holding their blocks for an extended period of time.
So if you're going to run these weird counters where Montgomery has to start this way and go all the way across the formation to go off tackle on the other side, of course he's going to have to break three tackles to get to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
They never, ever run a sweep. They never run a toss.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like, I get it. It's not like, the old Madden where if you just ran a pitch out, you could run your running back like 20 yards behind the line of scrimmage and then run him up the sidelines for a first down. We know that doesn't work. But if you're a defender on the edges, on either edge, in a Bear game, you can pretty much figure you don't have to worry about playing the run at all because they're not coming that way. Nobody is running near you. You can just play pass over there because that's not where they run the ball. And how can your offense possibly work? How can you ever get to the plays that you think are going to get you big gains if you can't condition the defense to go, oh, I've got to come up and react to this, and then get behind them? It's crazy. And they got 9 guys who used to be offensive coordinators.
Yeah.
I mean, what are their meetings like? I just have a feeling that they all get on Zoom at the same time. And they're all on mute. And they don't know it. And they're just talking to each other for an hour. And then they're like, all right, good meeting. And they all think they got their point across and nobody heard anything that anybody else said.
That might be the best theory going right now to explain the offense. Everybody's on mute.
Everybody's on mute. Because the offense certainly seems to be on mute.
Yeah. Well, and even so, we're coming back to a theme too, where as good as the defense has played, and Foles is certainly looking to be a guy who has command of the huddle and looks like a competent quarterback, but we're still every week is a gift or more from the other team to make this thing happen.
Yeah, they do need that. They've had all the wins have been strangely, they've been a through line, and it's been important players hurt and then just mind boggling coaching decisions on the other side.
Yeah, or yesterday with Bridgewater to that pass to DJ Moore. Yeah. Could not have been more wide open.
Right. And Buster
screen, not even in North Carolina when this play is.
Oh, that was the other thing I wanted to bitch about with Velma. Now, Jalen Johnson probably had his worst game as a Bear. He still made some nice plays. In fact, the first interception was because he broke on the ball and made a really nice play and knocked it to Tayshaun Gibson.
Yeah.
But Velma apparently thought that Jalen was covering DJ Moore on every play. And most of DJ Moore's catches were on Buster because he was when he was in the slot. The Bear cornerbacks do not go into the slot. They stay on the edges, and it's either Buster or Sherrick McManus, depending on how many receivers you have out there. One of those guys is the guy who's going to put, it's the slot corner. It's not Jalen Johnson or Kyle Fuller.
Right.
And it was like, God, he's having a rough enough game. Don't be assigning him Buster screens fuck ups too. You know, that's not fair.
Jalen did not have a good game, although he had a bullshit pass interference called. Yes.
Right. And they're pinning their arms against each other. Right. Just let it go.
And Velma, I thought, did a good job of calling out what a ridiculous penalty that
was. He was like, yeah, no, that's not interference.
Yeah. Where Kenny, I don't think.
Oh, Kenny did the whole, oh, you're a defensive guy. You don't think anything's interference. Kenny's sitting there the whole day going, I hear Doc Emmerich's going to retire. I'm going to be the voice of hockey. Who gives a shit about Carolina and Chicago? Fuck this. I'm going to go pretend I flunked another COVID test. You can have Dick Stockton for the rest of the year. How are you going to like that, Velma? He's like, what?
Yeah. Ooh, oof. By the way, those two in the booth, definitely not 6 feet apart.
No, they've given that up, I think.
Yeah.
Although, again, last night, because the Sunday night game was in Santa Clara, Al and Chris had to wear the masks again, which is just 3 hours of them bitching about the masks, which I still think is a ruse. I think they bitch about the mask because as soon as the camera's off, they take them off. And they figure if they complain about them, people will just assume they must really be wearing them.
Yeah, I mean, why? Yeah, they're not keeping those masks on when the cameras are off. Come on.
Nope.
There's no way. Al certainly isn't. For sure.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't know. Do you believe in miracles? No, I'm that guy.
Huh? Yeah.
I survived. Right. Lake Placid. I survived an earthquake at a World Series game. That didn't kill me. Yeah. I had this, your little fake China virus isn't going to take me down. I don't need your mask. You guys should be lucky to get coronavirus from Al Michaels. You guys ever see basketball? Huh?
Yeah.
I wonder if he's mad that Costas got the, you're excited. Look at these nipples. Al probably wishes that was, actually, I'm sure Al doesn't wish that was his line.
No. Al's like, I wrote that line.
I didn't watch to see whether Al had anything to say about Joe Morgan passing.
I confess, I did not see any of that. I was watching baseball. I did not see that. No. That game last night. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if he did.
They work together, right? I'm sure at some point.
Anyway. Must have.
So yeah, you know, I hate to sit here and complain about the best start in since 2012, Bears start 5-1, don't make the playoffs.
That did not go well.
They finished 5-6, and then Lovey.
Wait, but that team
5-5. They went 10-6. They're one of the few 10-6 teams to ever miss the playoffs. It was bad luck, really. And then Lovey got canned.
But the 2012 team, based on that DVOA thing or whatever, was not ahead.
No, they were not on that. No,
they were not. Oh, so this team is worse than that team.
So far, yes.
So far, okay.
Yeah, but that paved the way for Trestmania. So it worked out great. It
worked out fantastic
for the Bears.
Which paved the way for John Fox.
The 2012 Bears were that was the end of the Urlacher, Peanut, Cutler. I think Brandon Marshall was there. I think they got him that in 12, and then so that actually was a pretty good. Well, they were 10-6. That was a pretty good team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this team should be able to go at least 10-6 now. should be able to go 500 the rest of the way. The Vikings have packed it in. That's two more wins. You get the Lions. That's another one. Hell, you're already at eight. You just got to find two more.
Right.
You get Drew Brees, who can't throw the ball 6 yards in the air.
All of a sudden, the Packers don't look so insurmountable after yesterday.
Yeah. Although, the Bears. Yeah, they're going to go to Lambeau. They're playing on Sunday night when they finally go out there, and it'll be the same old shit. They'll be up 21-0 in the first quarter. They'll haul, they'll airlift Rodgers out of the stadium in a helicopter strapped to the backboard. And with 4 minutes left in the game, with the Bears still up by 3 touchdowns, he'll come wandering in out of the tunnel, lead them to 22 unanswered points and win the game. So that's our lot in life.
That would probably be how it plays out, yeah.
So I'm wondering if the Saint game, I would guess, if I'm Nagy, he's saving the Mitch Taysom Hill package. The long-awaited, we're all waiting for it. I'm so excited. I can't wait. He's saving it for the Saints, right? He just wants to, like, shove it right in Sean Payton's face.
It's
Look at this. Here's my Taysom Hill. Much better than yours.
Way better.
Mitch. So I don't know if you noticed, but Trubisky was trending on Twitter during the game.
I saw your tweet about that, but I did not.
For no apparent reason, because it's not like Foles was not playing poorly. He wasn't playing great, but it wasn't, oh my God, we got to switch quarterbacks.
No.
Just,
why was he trending? Did we ever figure that out?
Yeah, it was just people on Twitter being assholes. So if you clicked on Trubisky and then sorted from latest, it was all, might as well put Trubisky on. I can't believe they benched Trubisky for this guy. Blah, 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 blah. It's like, all right, shut up.
Stop it.
No one wants to listen to your crap.
Yeah. I mean, say what you will about Foles. Foles is leaps and bounds better than Trubisky.
Yeah, it's I mean, it'll take an injury for him to not play. And then who knows? We may very well see the dawning of the Tyler Bray era, which will probably be it's just like an 0-1 when Drew Bledsoe got hurt and that skinny little guy Tom Brady came in, and then for the next 19 years the quarterback quarterback problems were solved. Same with the Bears. Tyler Bray comes in.
We got him right here in the system. Already.
I remember in 2001, and I know in 2002, I must have written 10 times. I mean, people forget just what an unspectacular college career Tom Brady had. He shared time at quarterback with Drew Henson in Michigan.
Yeah.
It was a 6th-round pick, just a complete non-athlete looking guy. Yeah. I guess he was a good athlete because he was also an excellent baseball player, apparently. But he didn't look like an athlete. He's one of the slowest quarterbacks of all time. He just is. Yep. He's just not fast. And when he first took over for the Patriots, and he played pretty well right away, I remember I wrote, I don't know how many times, I can't believe the Bears can't even find a guy as good as Tom Brady. Which now you look back and you're like, all right, you were writing that about one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. But no, there was nothing to suggest at the time that's what we were looking at, except for the fact that he was good right away and just has always been good. So who knows? Maybe Tyler Bray lurking on the bench is the next Tom Brady.
Maybe he is. Maybe he is. So let me ask you about Nick Foles now.
Maybe he's not. He's got Drees back.
Is there a quarterback that Nick Foles has command, it seems to have command of the huddle, seems to command respect. If nothing else, have the Bears had a guy like that since McMahon?
Honestly, and this is going to sound like, I think the only guy, maybe since McMahon that's like that was Josh McCown.
Josh McCown, interesting. I thought maybe we were going to go Eric Kramer on me.
His teammates loved him, and he was more productive that year than Jay was.
Yeah.
Now, there was another guy. There was nothing to suggest that was anything more than a couple of months of, hey, he finally played competently. Because he, ironically, went to Tampa
right
to be the starter and was terrible and then bounced around. And he's still think he's on the Eagles practice squad somewhere. I mean, he's stashed away. I think he's coaching high school football. And, I mean, Philip Rivers must be super jealous.
I was going to say.
That like, Alabama, I mean, he gets to do both. How the hell can he do both? I want to do that.
Yeah, but I mean, it might.
Right, but Foles should be a more, he's a much more accomplished Josh McCown. I mean, he got Super Bowl MVP.
Right, right. I mean, you know, how far away are we from Nick Foles just, yeah, forget that, Nick. I called the screen, Matt. Why'd you throw the bomb? Because he was open, Matt. I mean, how far away are we from that? Right, just going full McMahon and just ignoring everything Nagy sent into the huddle.
What I want is a camera. We've seen it a couple of times the last 2 weeks where McCown gets the line, or McCown, no, I'm going to call him that. Foles gets the line, and he starts doing, especially this year, you can tell because there's no real crowd noise, so you can hear the audibles better. And he yells, kill, 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 which means, all right, that play is off. We're going to run on this. And he's audible to a run that has not worked at all. And I immediately want a shot of Nagy. I want his the top of his head turning bright red through the visor and just like ready to explode. Like, I can't believe you audibled out of that amazing triple reverse that I had called and switched to a halfback dive just because we had more blockers than they had defenders over there. It didn't work, so clearly you should never do that again. That's the stuff that I wish the things we just don't know, like when a play gets changed and why it got changed to what it did. And it's ironic too, because Nagy in his first year, one of the things the media loved him because after the John Fox era where Fox wouldn't talk about anything, he wouldn't talk about strategy, wouldn't talk about anything, because God forbid he give away any secrets. Yeah. Nagy really seemed like this kind of open book. Like, he was more than happy to explain why they were doing the things they were doing. Well, it took the reporters like 6 or 7 weeks of the season to realize he really wasn't saying anything. He was talking and was friendly, but he wasn't really explaining thing, which is fine. I mean, I guess, you know, you're the football coach, and we know football coaches are ridiculously secretive. Like the fact that he wouldn't announce who was going to play left guard. Alex Barrs or Rashawn Coward. It's like, I don't think the Panthers really give a shit, because neither one of them are any good. One of them's taller than the other one. So maybe that's what it was.
Right.
Your leverage point's going to be different. That'll screw him up for a good 2 plays. But it was the same thing before the Colts game. He wouldn't say who the punt returner was going to be.
Yeah.
As though the Colts were going to spend, you know, an extra 6 hours that week preparing for the difference between Ted Ginn just refusing to catch a punt, just letting it roll, and Anthony Miller, you know, racing over to, you know, more likely to they would have had to have done more fumble practice with Anthony.
Right.
Like, he's going to drop half of these because he's going to go field ones he shouldn't even bother. But Ted, he's not going to catch him, even kick it right at him. No matter what he does for the Bears, the image of Ted Ginn Jr. to me is always going to be one of the first punts he caught in Atlanta, where he just reached up over his head and caught it like a pass. He didn't even bother to get under it. He just, like, at the last second, just threw his hands up like, fine, I guess I'll catch the goddamn thing, and then fell down. That's like, Ted, I don't think that's – I know you used to be good at this. I don't think that's what you do.
Yeah. That's we didn't discuss that play over Zoom. You were on mute.
Coach. We had a specialty meeting for an hour. Nobody told me I was on mute. We didn't think it was going to matter.
It didn't matter.
I had an astute point and I completely lost it. I forget what it was.
Was it about Zoom?
I'm sure it was about, had to have been about Bear special teams, but I've forgotten what it was. Pat O'Donnell had an excellent game.
Yes.
He had the one great punt where he literally, like, it nose first on the one. and then bounce back a little bit. Those are always fun to see.
That was cool.
And then the last one, the 54-yarder, it really looked like one of those, just kick it as far as you can. We'll take the touchback. That's fine. Just air it out.
Yeah. Yeah, he bailed them out there when they needed that.
He's been the punter for a long time now.
Since Bob Parsons.
Good old number 86. Bob Parsons, the listed at tight end punter for a long time.
All right, tight end punter.
He caught a few passes. He was not much of a tight end, I don't think.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, that's the first Bear punter I remember.
Yeah, me too.
It was Bob Parsons. I mean, I don't know who the greatest Bear punter of my lifetime was. It's either Chris Gardocki or Maury Buford. I don't know which one. Both were great. I guess.
I gotta go Maury, don't you think?
Well, I played the pretend saxophone so well in the shuffle video.
All right.
Now, Bill Belichick would have loved Gardocki because he was left footed.
Yes.
Belichick likes the left footed punter because the punt returners don't see the ball spin that way very often. He always thinks that's a little bit of an advantage. So
right.
He always try to find a left footed punter.
That's why there's 25 left-footed punters in the NFL today.
right now, Belichick's like, shit, I guess we got to get a right-footed punter now. They all zigged, we got to zag.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was. Did you hear that the Panthers had to shut down their training or practice facility today because somebody's got COVID?
I did see that right before we got on, yes.
This is all a ruse so that Bears-Rams Wednesday night football.
There we go. We're going to break that barrier.
I really don't. Like, as we're recording this, the Chiefs and Bills are playing an early Monday. It's like a Monday afternoon game.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I think half of this is a TV. It's like, all right, you guys have no inventory. You know, there's nothing. Right. There's nothing on.
Yeah.
So here's some football. You can sell ads for this. Hell yeah, we can.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that point strikes a little too close to home, man.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Yeah, but I'm sure that's it. I mean, it's where I am, it's 3:48 in the afternoon, and we're in the third quarter. 10 minutes left in the third quarter.
So my wife, we were watching something the other night, and there's a new AT&T commercial with Lily.
Yes.
And she's like, this commercial looks weird. I said, they're clearly, the two actors were not on set at the same time. It's her talking to another. It's just two people talking, and their eye lines don't match up at all. Somebody did a terrible job of matching it. So as an actor, what is being shot right now?
So stuff like that. I think prior to that, there was a J.K. Simmons commercial with farmers where there's a guy, he's in a garage and a guy shows up at the garage with something.
Oh, yeah, that's one where he's like metalworking, whatever, and he's working on his app.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And they're clearly nowhere near each other. Yeah. But things are actually now starting to get going again. Yeah. So things are starting to ramp back up, which is fortunate, but it's been quite a while.
Because I know Fargo was basically done they still had some stuff they somehow had to shoot to finish.
They had for that one they had shot it all and shot in Chicago, except for like the last episode. So that's where Rock had to come in and the cast for the last episode. And then I think they had to do some stuff for like the previous episode, but they had that mostly done. So there's a lot of productions like that too, right? That were starting were shut down and now have to restart. And then there's stuff that was supposed to shoot that hasn't gotten started yet. And so you're getting a lot of stuff that's kind of starting to go like all at once now, which will present its own sort of challenges.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's like next year, all the big movies have been pushed into 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you could say, oh, well, it'll work out because the 2021 movies haven't been shot. So everything just gets pushed back a year. But inevitably, we're just going to have a glut at some point of here's all the big movies. We don't have enough weekends to premiere them all on. So some are going to have to go head to head with each other, and then everybody's going to be pissed off about the box office and we didn't make our money back and screw this. Yeah. And
well, that'll be a good problem to have, but it's getting complicated because, you know, you have guys, you know, or you have stars that are committed to different shows, different projects at different times. So if you're, you know, booked on, if you're the lead actor or actress on a show that is, you know, that is shooting right now, but you have something booked in November, you know, then you have all that sort of stuff has to be worked through.
Yeah, I don't know. Were you going to be in the, were you cast in the Tom Cruise space movie where he was actually going to go up? Because now they're saying that might not happen. But honestly, that seems like the safest movie to shoot.
Yeah, that probably would be. Yeah.
So I think that I get it. I think all everything probably goes to space.
Elon Musk will be thrilled.
Yeah. So if they do a Fresh Off the Boat reunion show, and they It'll need a great. And they need a Nutcracker salesman, it's going to be Nutcrackers in space.
We will do that from Mars.
It's like, okay, Mike. Well, the flight to Mars is going to take 2.5 years. And then we got you for 2 days.
Right.
And then 2.5 years back. I'll take it. That's fine.
I'm good. Yeah, we can't pay you for the travel.
That's right. Can you chip in for rocket fuel? No, I can't.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, the Bears are in LA next week, so it seemed like a perfect time to talk state of the TV and movie industry.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So yeah. So if you're optimistic about the Bears, which I'm trying to be, I'm just having a hard time. I'm waiting for any sign, any little sign. I am willing to hop on, not just hop on the bandwagon. I'm willing to drive it. So, like, one competent half of offensive football, and you're not going to be able to talk me out of the Super Bowl. But a couple of good things happened this weekend, other than the Bears winning again, which is the most important thing. The Packers didn't just lose, they got their asses kicked by a team that the Bears, the week before, had exposed as undisciplined frauds.
Right.
The Saints couldn't get out of their own way. They were holding, they were jumping off sides, they were doing all this stuff. They played the Packers yesterday. Only the second game in franchise history without a penalty, ever. And they didn't have a penalty or a turnover, which has only happened a handful of times in NFL history.
Right.
The other good thing was, now the Bears are playing the Rams this week. The Rams were 4-1, and everybody's like, holy shit, the Rams are back. Well, the 49ers slapped them around last night. The Niners did get Jimmy Garoppolo back, although a lot of people tell you that's not really that much of an advantage.
Right.
Which is, I don't, every time he has a good game, it screws up my, you're going to be the starting quarterback next year for the Bears. But I still think it's going to happen. So the Rams, who the Bears play this week, suddenly look like maybe they're not as good as everybody thought. Although under closer inspection, shouldn't people have realized, I think 3 of the 4 Rams wins are against the NFC East, a division so bad that the 2-win Cowboys are going to be in first place tomorrow, whether they win tonight or not.
Ooh.
Yeah. The East is not good, and that's who the Rams have not been good. Feasting on. I think their one loss previous to that was Buffalo, who actually might be good.
It might be.
But the Rams basically handed that game away. So,
right.
So who knows? Maybe 6-1. Then you
could
get
be.
Then you get the Saints, and you throw up Taysom Trubisky. They can't stop that. The Bear
right.
defense ought to have fun playing against a team that their quarterback can't throw the ball 5 yards in the air. That could also be interesting. I have problems. Every time I see the Saints, I get the same pang that I get when the Bears, when you see the Chiefs or the Texans, and you see Patrick Mahomes or you see Deshaun Watson, and you think,
right.
Oh, we got Mitch instead of them. Every time I see the Saints, it's a reminder to me that Ryan Pace went into that draft going, what we really need is a running back who can catch passes out of the backfield. And he drafted a 5'5" guy from Division 3, or whatever, Division 2, I guess.
Yeah.
And a few picks later, the Saints took Alvin Kamara, yeah, who might be the greatest receiving running back in NFL history.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was good. And it was ironic that it was his old team that drafted him.
Yes.
Pace's old team. Yeah.
Apparently, yeah, that's one of the files he forgot to steal. forgot to hit Control C on that,
yeah,
folder.
On that one.
Didn't take Kamara, but did take Tariq, who, you know, we all love Tariq. He's adorable. He's only got one leg now, which probably that's not great for a guy who relies, yeah, completely on speed.
But, yeah.
So I was going to look, see what the line is. God, what are we up to? Week 7 already? Good Lord. How time flies. Well, of course, it's snowing out. It's got to be week 7. That's not the right thing. Good thing I pulled this up before. There it is. VegasInsider.com, official sponsor of the... Well, no, they're not. They're not official sponsors of podcast. Podcast has no sponsors. Ooh. Well, if you go shopping... Now, I guess its consensus is Rams by 5.5.
That seems like a lot.
It does. Considering that, you know, two relatively evenly matched teams.
Mm-hmm.
I am a little concerned that the Bears have any three guys can block Aaron Donald at one time. I'm not sure they have that, but they're going to probably want to. Or we are going to see Mitch because Nick Foles will have been tossed into a garbage can.
With a broken leg. Yeah.
But I would not have much fear of the great Jared Goff against the Bears defense. So.
No, they could have Bears defense could have a lot of fun against Jared Goff, as a matter of fact. You could see that happening.
So 5.5 over under 46.
43? Oh, 46.
Okay. Yeah, the fast turf of beautiful SoFi Stadium.
Uh-huh. Right.
So we all remember the last time the Bears went to LA. That was just last year. On a Sunday night. And that was the game where Mitch got benched and then Nagy lied and said he didn't bench him. But he didn't take the snaps at the end of the game. No, he wasn't benched. Well, why wasn't he in? Well, I didn't bench him. Like, all right, well.
What was he? Was he hurt?
I didn't bench him.
Okay.
It's like, all right, whatever.
Yeah. He's the master of manipulating the media.
So it used to be that I thought that they would always tell the stories about how Nagy, after his Arena Football League career dried up, was selling real estate and then got an offer from the Eagles to be like a volunteer coach or whatever. And he took it.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought, hey, that's a clever story. But now I think about it. And I, remember that, Mike Matheny sold real estate so efficiently that he was broke and had to take the job with the Cardinals. And I don't like any parallels where you can compare any coach of a team I root for with Mike Matheny. I just, I'm not happy about that.
Understandably so, yeah.
But, I certainly think the Bears ought to be able to cover. I can see this being a field goal game. And
definitely.
The bright lights, I get all excited about playing a game in front of Steve Levy and Brian Greasy and Louis Riddick. I mean, who doesn't? It's funny that I don't know how much Monday Night Football you've watched this year, but that booth is getting a lot of faint praise. Basically, what people are saying is, well, they're a lot better than than Joe Tessitore, Booger McFarlane, and then for 1 year, Jason Witten were.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. I mean, you could have picked three assholes off the street, and that would have been better than that. I do think they're pretty good. Greasy, to me, is... I mean, he's... I don't know why he's there.
Yeah.
I think you could. I always like Louis Riddick. I think he's smart. He explains things well. And it's funny, they were like, well, he put him in the booth. He's a front office guy. What's he know? Well, he played defensive back in the NFL for years.
Yeah.
So I think
that qualifies. That qualifies.
Right. Yeah. It's not, this isn't Tony Kornheiser or Dennis Miller. This is an actual football player who has been a player, he's been a coach, and he's worked in a front office. I would think that's kind of valuable insight. And he's pretty good at it. And it's, and then Levy's pretty good. So, yeah, it'll be nice to see. I'm sure the Bears players will be just probably awestruck at the the sheer wattage of celebrity that's up there in the booth. But
Yeah. They'll be awestruck at the celebrity that could be there in person, but won't be.
Yeah. So you were saying you would have been at this game had, had fans been allowed.
Yes. Yes. We're planning this, my buddy and I, over a year ago. Or no, it couldn't have been a year ago. Whenever the schedule came
out. Yeah.
Well, a long time. We're like, all right, this will be great.
I think right after the season ends, you know who they're going to play. You just, at first, you don't know when the games are going to be.
Right.
But yeah.
It would have been awesome because that stadium sure looks amazing.
So, do they have the Rams and Chargers don't have their own field, right? Or do they? Do they pull one out? Like the, you know, in Arizona, they literally pull the field out and give it a little sun once in a while and then tuck it back in. I don't remember that I heard that. I don't think they do. I don't think they have two sets where they, that would seem a little extravagant.
Yeah. But, I don't think so.
I think the field can sink and then they can close these big doors over it to have concerts and stuff and not have to squish the grass and then pull it up.
Yeah,
I think that's what it is. There's some funky thing that happened. I mean, it only cost like $1.something billion to build. So.
Yeah. Should be able to have a concert without ruining the field somehow.
And then does it have a, it has a roof, but it's really more like a, I mean, it's open on both ends.
Yeah. You don't really need it. A roof out here.
Yeah. Cause you can pretty much tell like what, you know what time all six times a year it's going to rain.
Yeah.
It's going to rain for 20 minutes next Thursday.
So yeah.
Don't schedule anything. It was like Len Casper always used to joke that the Marlins could never take batting practice because nobody there could figure out that it was going to rain at 6 o'clock for 20 minutes every night in Miami.
Right.
It's like, guys, maybe we should probably have batting practice a half hour earlier. What?
Yeah.
So, it'll be, that's too bad. But, you know, I'm sure the Bears will be back. I'll see, 2 years in a row. So they'll be back in 20 years, probably.
Yeah, probably. That'll be terrific.
But there's got to be, have they announced when the Super Bowl is going to be there? Because that's when I'm sure the Bears will be back.
I don't know, but it could be a playoff game this year. That's possible.
It could.
It could get back for that.
We all know that had Cody Parkey only single doinked it and not double doinked it, that the Bears were going. Is that right? That's not right. Were the Bears going to play the Rams? Yes, the Bears were going to LA to play the Rams, but because the Eagles won. They were the sixth seed instead of the three seed. They went to New Orleans instead, and I think the Rams played the Cowboys. So they would have already and then the playoff projection that I saw last week. It's always good after 5 weeks to see playoff projections. It would have been Bears would have gone to the Superdome to play Weenie Arm Drew Brees. That's a team that needs to get home field. Because if Drew has to go to Lambeau or Soldier's Field,
that's gonna be a little tougher in the outdoor
in December. It's not gonna happen.
Yeah.
And then I saw the NFL announce that they had to move they had promised the Saints Super Bowl 58. I don't know when that is. Next year? Year after next?
Who knows?
They had to push it back a year because they're going to the 17-game schedule, which pushes everything back a week.
Mm.
The Super Bowl was going to happen on the Sunday before Mardi Gras. And the people, apparently the cops and stuff in New Orleans are like,
no.
Can we not do that, please?
Yeah.
So they moved it, and they haven't announced who's getting that Super Bowl, but everybody knows it's going to Vegas.
Right.
That's like a barely hidden thing, is that they will eventually just announce that the Super Bowl is going to Vegas. So.
Right.
I love the fact that apparently the dome in Vegas is very nice, but it's the Allegiant Field, I think is what they call it, and it's the Allegiant Airlines. If you've ever flown Allegiant Airlines, it's basically like a bucket that someone slingshots into the air. I could not think of a lower quality thing to slap on the side of a stadium than Allegiant.
The stadium will turn it around for him, I'm sure.
So that stadium was originally supposed to be Farmers Field. So did SoFi buy Farmers? And is that why it's SoFi? Because Farmers Insurance, that was going to be the original name of the stadium. It was going to be Farmers Field. And then all of a sudden it was SoFi. And I just assumed that whatever Southern Financial, whatever SoFi is, bought a bunch of shit. And part of it was Farmers and decided they're going to put their own name on the... It's not unlike whatever telephone company is now the name of what used to be Pac Bell Park.
Right.
The name
right.
would change just because the name of the company would change and they'd have to redo the sign again.
I'm just waiting for them to change the name from SoFi to Gallagher Way Stadium. That's got to be in the offing.
I would think. Yeah, one of my favorite things about the Ricketts family was so prepared when they bought the Cubs. They, in their prospectus, they had all these things that they were going to do to monetize their purchase. And one of them was they were going to sell naming rights to Wrigley Field. And one of their consultants said, I think you've overvalued what the naming rights to the stadium are. And they're like, they had put like $30 million on what they were going to, $30 million for like 6 years or something. That's what we're going to charge some company. And they're like, well, we thought that was pretty conservative. He's like, well, here's the problem. Your naming rights to your stadium are worthless. Because no one's ever going to call it anything but Wrigley Field.
Yeah, right.
So you're not going to get anybody to pay you for it. Because really all you're selling then is a sign, a billboard on the side of the stadium. That no one will ever call it that.
Yeah.
And if they ever needed an example of how that's true... does anybody ever call the Sears Tower anything but the Sears Tower?
No.
And it is not the Sears Tower, and hasn't been the Sears Tower for a decade.
A long time. Yeah.
At least. I don't even know if it's still Willis. I think it is. It might not even be that anymore.
Might not even.
And nobody gives a shit because it's always the Sears Tower.
The Sears Tower.
So Wrigley Field is always going to be Wrigley Field.
Yes.
Now, I personally would have gone to the Wrigley people and said, all right, you better pay up. Because we've been getting all this free advertising for years, we're gonna slap another name on the stadium.
Yeah,
and see what you can get out of them. And if you know if they're savvy enough to go fuck you, we're not giving you anything. Then you're like, all right, screw it, we're screwed.
Like, well, how much do we have to pay to be the Wrigley Spearmint Gum Field?
So I'm one more bit of Arcania. Arcania, is that a word? So Augustus Bush, the second maybe. I forget which Gus Bush this was.
They run together.
The Cardinals were tired of Sportsman Park and decided they were going to build a new stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And they told Major League Baseball that they were going to name it Budweiser Field. And this shows how much things have changed. Major League Baseball threw a fit. I said, you can't name the stadium after a product. It's ridiculous. We don't do that. You are prohibited from it. And Gussie Bush is like, all right, fine. What if we name it Bush Stadium after the family? And they're like, that's acceptable. He's like, okay, fine. We're going to name it Bush Stadium. First thing he did was he called the brewery and he said, we're coming up with a new beer. And that's literally the reason there's a Bush beer. That's they said, good. Fuck it. If you won't let us name the stadium after the beer, we'll name the beer after the stadium.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Major League Baseball always so far ahead of its time.
Right. Why would you be able to monetize the name of the stadium you play in?
Yeah.
And now everyone is a freaking NASCAR. I mean, it's just, it might as well have. I'm amazed that the stadiums have still only have one product name.
Well, I'm sure that's coming.
Yeah. I mean, we're already. The other weird thing, I guess I have one more thing. So the NFL they allow teams to put a team or a product logo on their practice jerseys. Why does that have any value? Because NFL teams don't allow cameras to shoot anything in a practice. So you pay them to put your logo on their practice jersey, and then they don't let anybody show anything with your logo on it. So I don't get it.
Skybox tickets? I don't know. Is that what you get for that?
Well, yeah, but still, it's like...
Yeah.
I could just buy a fucking Skybox, too.
Well, but then you're an official sponsor.
Oh, that's true. They're paying... No, I'm paying for it. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure it's that.
Yeah.
I'm sure...
You know, we're
I don't even know who. I think it's Atletico. I think that's who's on the Bear jerseys. I'm surprised they even know who it is. But at some point, we're getting close to European soccer, where like the main logo on the jersey is going to be the sponsor, and then just a little patch somewhere with like the team seal on it, and that's all you're going to get.
Let's hope not.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
So Bears Rams next Monday. You get a Sunday to yourself. You can watch whatever you want.
Exciting.
I guess we just had that last Sunday.
Yeah, I was gonna say a couple in a row, or not in a row, but yeah. Extra day to prepare.
That's right. I'm sure, and the podcast will reflect it.
I'm sure will.
All right.
All right.
Well, thanks, Mike.
Thank you. We'll see you next time.
Many of us have herpes.